Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I've been having fun this week looking at all kinds of tech gifts.
Oh, good. That's right. This is that day.
This is the big tech gift. Everybody's got to decide, okay, what's going on in technology? What's kind of fun to look at? Of course, I only talk about gifts that I enjoy.
Of course.
So it's a fairly limited subset here. If I don't like it, I don't talk about it.
So it'll be drones, and more drones.
No, and drone accessories. I decided not to include any drones. I could have included drones on here.
A whole hour on drones.
Yeah, I could have done that, but I decided not to do that. Well, Symantec has discovered another state-sponsored malware called Regin. I don't know where that name came from, but it's been out there for quite
a work on that.
It's been out for quite a while, and hackers have been using luxury hotel Wi-Fi networks to steal all kinds of stuff from corporate CEOs. We'll discuss that in a bit. Today we're going to feature the man who was founder of the Google X Labs. He also led the Google self-driving car initiative as well as the Google Glass initiative, Sebastian Thrun. He's a very interesting guy. And, of course, it was a giant
huge
mailbag. Yes.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Look at that.
Oh,
right on
cue. Right on cue. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. Well, thank you very much. I have Office 2011 for the Mac, and I need to edit a Word document that I created on a PC in 2012. It was created at a prior job, and someone put the doc in restriction lock and requires a password. I don't know the password. Do you have any thoughts on what I need to do with my iMac to use restricted permissions? Others have posted this problem, and I didn't find any viable solution. Well, it's a difficult problem, Lauren, because since you have Office 2011, ever since Office 2012, the encryption on Microsoft files has been significantly improved. Before version 2007, like the 2003, it was a pretty wimpy kind of encryption system, and you could actually get into the file relatively easily. But in 2007, they tightened it up a bit and made it more difficult. Now, Word stores the document in an encrypted state. So simply opening it up in another application like a text editor isn't going to allow you to see anything because it's all been encrypted. So you actually have to have the key to unencrypt it to see anything. Now, there are a couple of methods that you can use. One method simply does a brute force search for all the passwords, and that takes quite a while, depending on how many characters are in the password. So if you have it searched for passwords up to 8 characters long, I mean, it's going to take a good long while to go through all possible permutations. The other method is to take a section of text and analyze it. And because Word documents have common features, like they use the word the a lot, that you're able to look at common features or expected behavior in the Word document, and you can infer the encryption key. And that's frequently much quicker. So those are the two methods. So there are a couple of companies you can go to and download programs that will actually go through and use brute force techniques to get the password. One is from Rixler Software. That's Rixler.com. And they have a password recovery program, costs around $30. It only runs on a Windows machine, though, so you're going to have to find a Windows machine. And it'll just sit there and crank away. And you tell it how long you think the password might be, and it'll just crank away. They said expect to wait up to, you know, up to 10 days.
Wow.
I mean, it's because it there's also one by Elcomsoft, ElcomSoft.com. Now, their recovery program is $37 for the home edition. Get a standard edition for $74. It's roughly the same deal. There is an online service that that I've seen discussed quite a bit, and that would be password-find.com. This is completely online, and you can just upload your file to the service, and they use their high-speed servers to do the calculation, and it'll remove the password for $20, or they'll find the password for $40. It's a license that you can that you get for this. And you can do multiple Word files for it. So you can, it's a license that that you can put more than one Word file up there. So those are actually your options. I don't think there are any free ways to do this. But I think since you actually have the file itself, that should be relatively easy to do. But it's going to cost you $20 to $40 to get it done. We got an email from Carl Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, I recently read an article on the Forbes website entitled "The Largest Cyber Attack in History Has Been Hitting Hong Kong Sites." In this article, which I provide a link to, it states that someone from another country has been using distributed denial of service attack to bring down these Hong Kong sites and doing it at an unprecedented rate of 500 gigabits per second. The articles like this states that these could ultimately threaten the Internet's ability to act as a landscape that's, which allows all servers and all services to operate without undue stress on them. They also talk about how it was putting stress on the domain name service system. Could you explain how distributed denial of service works and how they're putting all this stress on the DNS system? Longtime podcast listener, Carl Tyler. Well, Carl, that was a good question. And this particular attack in Hong Kong, it's suspected that the Chinese government's doing it, actually, and that they're attacking these Hong Kong sites because they don't like the politics of what's going on there. Now, what a distributed denial of service attack is, each, you know, particular server only has so much processing power. So if you go to the server at a very high rate and it tries to answer all your requests, eventually you overwhelm its capacity and it can't answer all of your requests. So if somebody else comes in to make a request, their service is denied because you're using the capacity of the server. That's why it's called the denial of service attack. And you're basically overflowing that server and making requests that exceed its capacity to respond. Now, if those requests all came from one computer, I mean, it'd be really easy to protect from it. You just block that incoming IP address, and bingo, it's gone. So what they do is instead of having that request come from one computer, they have it come from 1,000 computers. So it's distributed around the Internet. So 1,000 computers are putting incoming data into that server to overwhelm it. And so that's a distributed denial of service attack. And typically these distributed denial of service attacks, they'll put malware on individuals' machines at their house. And so you might be in your house with an infected machine, and you might unwittingly be participating in a distributed denial of service attack. So that, and that has been quite frequent. And they have these bot armies, as they say, where they'll take over computers and they'll take bot armies and they can point them all at one server and bring it down. Now, but they were still able to work around that because these were servers that were from individuals and they could actually still block those 1,000 IP addresses. More recently, the hackers have gotten more sophisticated. They've actually gone into the Amazon cloud, and they've taken over servers in the Amazon cloud. Now, and they've gotten to the Amazon infrastructure. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a distributed denial of service attack. If you try to block that block of addresses, you bring down, say, the Amazon cloud for the country. And so now, all of a sudden, you've got a more difficult situation to fight against. And so there's been an evolution in technique as the hackers are trying to work around and develop methods that are harder to block. Now, how do they bring down the domain name server system? You see, the domain name server system, it's a resolution, as they call it, name resolution. So if you put in, say, WTOP.com or Stratford.edu in your web browser, that you're not telling it what IP address it is. You don't really have the address, so you don't know where it's located. So what you do is you send that name request to a domain name server. It resolves that name and sends back the actual IP address of where you're trying to get at. And then your browser makes a second request directly to that IP address. And so the domain name system converts English names or letter names, domain names, into numbers or a binary string of digits that are sent back out onto the internet. So, but the domain name servers also have a certain capacity that they can have. So what they were doing, they were instead of just putting down a particular IP address and going straight to the server to bring it down, they were actually putting in the domain name of the particular place they were going to, and they were loading that domain name server up with name resolution requests. So they were straining the domain name system. Now, the only way that the domain name system could, in fact, stop that from happening, they could just refuse to process all requests for that particular domain name, which is tantamount to shutting down the domain name. Mm-hmm. So that's what was going on. There was a strain on both the DNS system as well as on the servers themselves. People believe this was actually a well-engineered distributed denial-of-service attack engineered by the Chinese government, although there's no evidence that I could find that really pinned it down. It was just highly suspicious that's the kind of thing that they would be doing. But that was a great question, Carl. We got an email from Alex in Reston. Dear Tech Talk and, no, dear Doc and Jim, sorry.
Same thing, basically.
Yeah, dear Doc and Jim, that's right. What's the difference between Bluetooth and Wi-Fi? I mean, they both use the same frequency. They're in the 2.4 gigahertz band, which is the unlicensed frequency band that FCC has allowed for these kind of devices. Why don't they interfere with each other in the same band?
Mm-hmm.
Love the show, Alex. I think Alex asked this question because I featured Bluetooth last week.
Yes,
and I didn't really get into it. Well, let me explain the two. Bluetooth is designed to be a low data rate, short range communication protocol. Low data rate, short range. It's designed to connect to printers, to keyboards, to mice, all sorts of peripherals around the computer, by and large. Or it could connect to, headsets or speakers. But these are all low data rate applications. It was meant to be short range so that the range would only be 30 feet about. And so that meant they're very, very low power, so they don't use much battery power if you're on a battery powered device. On the other hand, Wi-Fi is designed to be a high data rate communication protocol, long range. So Wi-Fi is primarily designed for internet access. So the Bluetooth 4.0, so now that means that they're going to use the bandwidth differently. The Bluetooth 4.0 is actually 40 channels, 40 very narrow channels. You see, they're narrow frequency bands because the bandwidth is so low. They have 37 data channels and 3 advertising channels used for device discovery. All these channels are non-overlapping. So they've got basically 40 non-overlapping channels in the band. These are very narrow frequency bands, therefore very small, very low bandwidth. Now, they use frequency hopping that jumps between these 37 data communication channels. It hops, and it'll hop up to 1,600 times a second. Now, the reason that they do this hopping around is that they can detect where there's Wi-Fi, and if there's going to be Wi-Fi interfering with some of those channels, they just don't hop to it. So Bluetooth standard is designed so it does not interfere with Wi-Fi because it can hop around in these different channels, and the Wi-Fi is never going to cover all 40 channels. It'll cover some of the channels, but not all 40. So Bluetooth is going to find enough channels that it can communicate at. By the way, Bluetooth has enough channels that it can actually set up communication for up to 8 devices all at the same time. Now, Wi-Fi, which is in the same band, has 11 overlapping channels. Now, but there are only 3 channels that are non-overlapping, channel 1, channel 6, and channel 11. So essentially, it only has 3 channels, which are non-overlapping. So you got 3 channels as opposed to 40 channels. Therefore, the bandwidth of the Wi-Fi is like of each of the channels is 12 times wider than the Bluetooth bandwidth. Therefore, Wi-Fi has a much higher throughput because it's more bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
But Wi-Fi doesn't jump around. You pick what channel when you set up your router, and it just sits there.
Right.
And it counts on Bluetooth not to interfere with it.
Aha, interesting.
So there you go. There's the difference between Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. They both had different design specs, and therefore they have different frequency usage. There you go. That was a great question, Alex. We love, love, love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and we'll answer you on the air. Or sometimes we even answer you directly.
Personal service.
If it's an emergency request.
Gotcha. This is Saturday morning, of course, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More of the show coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Sebastian Thrun. Sebastian Thrun is an educator and robotics developer. He's best known for co-founding Udacity, which is a free online education service. And he was also the founder of Google X Labs. And he started the Google Self-Driving Car Initiative. Sebastian Thrun was born May 14, 1967, in Solinger, West Germany. He completed what they call his intermediate examination, or the Vordiplom, in computer science, economics, and medicine at the University of Hildesheim in 1988. At University of Bonn, he completed a diploma, which was his first degree, in 1993, and a PhD, with highest praise in Latin, that would be summa cum laude, in 1995 in computer science and statistics. His dissertation was something near and dear to me, explanation-based neural and network learning, a lifelong learning approach. So he was basically working on neural networks that you train rather than program. Mm-hmm. And that basically led into all of his work in robotics, actually. In 1994, he co-founded the University of Bonn's Rhino, which was a laboratory, and they developed the world's first robotic tour guide of the German Museum in Bonn. So he was already, he was applying his techniques of that he learned on a neural net learning to robotics. After getting his PhD, he joined the computer science department at Carnegie Mellon University as a research computer scientist. In 1998, he became assistant professor and co-director of the Robot Learning Laboratory at CMU. As a faculty member at CMU, he co-founded the master's program in automated learning and discovery, and that would later become a PhD program in the broad area of machine learning and scientific discovery. Thrun went on to found the CMU Pitt. This is Pitt is a is another university, Pitt State, which is down in Pittsburgh. He founded the Joint NurseBot Project, where they fielded interactive humanoid robots in a nursing home near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, see, he was focused on trying to solve problems, the world problems, with robots. He was just focused on that. In 2001, he spent a sabbatical year at Stanford, and then at the end of the year, returned back to CMU. In 2002, he helped develop a robot that would do mind mapping for projects. The idea, you know, try to map minds if they might be able to, you know, locate people in mines or do other sort of rescue work if they could map mines. In July 2003, he accepted associate professorship at Stanford. And in 2004, he was appointed as the director of the Stanford Artificial Intelligence Lab, SAIL. They call it SAIL for short. He contributed to the area of probabilistic robotics. Now, this is a field that marries statistics and robotics. See, if you look at, you know, because a robot never has perfect information. They've got, like, partial information. And just like the mind, the brain, neural nets in the brain, you have partial information, and you try to infer things. You try to get your best guess based on the information you've got. So I could see where his neural network activities would lead to this sort of probabilistic approach to trying to determine what is the best robotic action. Now, these probabilistic techniques have since become mainstream in robotics. In 2005, Thrun co-authored a textbook entitled Probabilistic Robots. In 2005, he set up at Stanford a team which entered the DARPA Grand Challenge. They had to take build a remotely piloted car that would drive this obstacle course out in the desert. That was called the DARPA Grand Challenge. His team won the 2005 DARPA Grand Challenge contest, this team at Stanford. Now, the same team entered in the DARPA Urban Challenge in 2007. That's where you had to drive around a city. His team won second place in the 2007 DARPA Urban Challenge. Thrun joined Google on sabbatical later, you know, but the next year, and along with several Stanford students. And while he was at Google on this 1 year sabbatical, he and the students co-developed Google Street View. And, you know, I've been looking around. That's kind of an aside. There are some funny pictures on Street View that they've come up with. There's some, you know, people.
Because it's all random.
It's all random, and you just see people doing everything, which probably I can't even talk about here. But it's probably not. It is quite humorous to see some of the stuff that they've discovered on Street View. In April 1st, 2011, he gave up his tenure at Stanford, and he went to Google full-time as a Google Fellow and Vice President. And that's when he founded the Google X Labs. Now, the Google X Labs, this is what they like to say is their moonshot research lab to solve the big problems. Now, while he was there, the first thing he launched was the driverless car project. You've seen Google's got these driverless cars. And you can see how this is just a continuation of everything he's worked on. By the way, he gave a great TED Talk on driverless cars. He went through all the people who have been killed with car accidents, and he said 95% of those accidents were caused by human error.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calculated the number of lives that would be saved if we had robotic cars.
But the problem is everybody will focus on the time that the machine failed and somebody got killed. That's you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
that'll
still bring things down. He also did a calculation that we could take existing freeways and we could triple the capacity if we didn't have the quirkiness of drivers like shifting lanes and doing all this stuff. The cars, because the cars could actually be closer and they would just be predictable. And so we could actually eliminate a lot of the traffic jams with existing freeways. He believes that in 20 years we're going to look back and wonder why in the world would we have self-driving cars? It's just so ridiculous. Because then you get in your car, you punch it in, and then you could just read a book while it's going someplace. So this is real. He's driven by this mission.
Mm-hmm.
Another project that he led, and he actually led this project, was at Google X. He started the self-driving car deal, but then he set up another team to do it. But he led the Google Glass activity there at Google, and of course, you know, Google Glass is they're trying to find applications for it. We bought a Google Glass, and it's. It's interesting. You've got this, this screen, and you can surf the web. You can talk to it as you're just wearing these glasses. But people think you're a little peculiar, so it doesn't lead to good social interactions.
No.
And people wearing Google Glass have been they call them glass holes. So I really didn't wear my Google Glass to the bar or anything, but I did enjoy walking
like
around
you
and playing with
lots of bars.
I don't go to enough bars actually, but if I went to a bar, I really wouldn't be.
I don't think it would help you pick up chicks.
No, probably not. Yeah, that's well. See, when that those days were so long ago, Google Glass didn't even exist.
Right.
they're also another.
Oh, for you, those days were so long ago.
That's right. For me. And then they have the Loon project where they're launching these balloons around the world,
right.
And these they just drift around the world to create this unstructured internet access. In January of 2012, while he was still at Google, he co-founded the online educational organization called Udacity, and these are where they have this massively online open online courses, MOOCs, and. And this is he co-founded with two other guys who'd worked with, and this has actually taken a life of its own. And he really loved the idea of giving education, free education to the world. And so this was kind of a mission of his. In August of 2014, he left Google. He left Google X. He relinquished his position as Google to devote more time to Udacity. At least that's what we're inferring. Now, he remains a Google advisor, and he's still working at Google part-time. Now, he's received numerous awards for his work in robotics. I didn't even list them here. There were so many. Because he's an interesting scientist. He is happiest when he's at the point where science and entrepreneurship converge. You got a lot of scientists that are the academia that has published papers, and they never do anything useful. And then you've got many entrepreneurs that never get connected with science. So he's able to bring science to a startup environment and actually make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he's happiest. So if you notice, he'll go back to academia and work, and then he'll go back into companies. So he's constantly moving. He doesn't stay any place any particular time. But he's on a mission to develop technology that will impact the world for the better. There you go. Sebastian Thrun, the man who co-founded Udacity and who founded Google X and is best known for his self-driving car initiatives.
What do you think? Is the self-driving car really going to happen? Is this something we can all
I think it'll happen on highways soon.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen on highways soon. Google has already, they've driven their self-driving cars over 140,000 miles around the country, including all around San Francisco.
Would you get in a self-driven car?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I would.
There you go. Personal endorsement from Dr. Schertz.
That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Stand by. You can parlay the information we just imparted upon your brain for a free prize here coming up on the pop quiz on Tech Talk on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life.
Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. And, of course, if it's a classroom, we have teaching material, and we want to assess the learning outcomes. That's right. So that'll be, of course, a pop quiz. Now, we're going to give you a pop quiz. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room at the Kareem Dining Room, Woodbridge or Falls Church. And all you have to do is listen and respond. Earlier in the show, we talked about Sebastian Thrun. He, of course, was the founder of the Google X Laboratory, as well as the co-founder of Udacity. While he was at Google, he worked on, I mentioned, three projects. One of them was the self-driving car. Name one of the other projects he worked on, and if you do that successfully, you'll be a winner for the day and get an A plus two tickets to fine dining.
We need to give people a winner of the day t-shirt. But First, what you need to do is call us. So if you're listening to us and calling from west of Solingen, West Germany, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of the main university campus at Hildensham, it's 877-936-9333. Everybody else, the wild card line, 877-936-9333. I'm sure you have other ideas.
That's right. If you're calling in from Hanoi and you'd like to have an encrypted data connection, simply call Skype and connect to the Tech Talk Radio 1 account, and that will be forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
Hanoi, are you planning a trip anytime soon?
Yeah, I'm going to Hanoi in February.
I hear it's lovely there that time of year.
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's a little cold, but that's okay.
Okay.
So
moving right along.
Let's talk about putting your phone into test mode. That's very interesting. There's a hidden application in your phone called Field Test Mode. Now, all you have to do to put your phone into field test mode is to call this number. And it's a very simple number. It sounds complicated, but now I've actually got this number memorized. So because I've been doing it all week, you put star 3001, then you do the hash symbol, and then 12345 hash symbol, and then another star, and you call that number, puts it right into the field test mode. Now, what's interesting, you know, the first thing you'll notice when you're in the field test node is you look up at the signal strength area. You know, we usually get 1 bar, 2 bars, 3 bars. It then converts the signal strength to dBm. Huh. So almost no signal is a minus 130 dBm, and a very strong signal is minus 40 dBm. So I'm sitting here at minus 98 dBm here in the studio. Now, why this is useful, suppose you're walking around the house, and you want to try to find where is the strongest signal strength, and you're looking for small variations, you can watch this dBm signal strength change a lot more dramatically. Now, this thing also includes all sorts of stuff about which cell tower you're connected to, what the cell tower measurements are. You know, like, for instance, let's see, like we can cell tower information, what frequency they're operating in, what the download frequency, what their tracking area code is, the cell identity, the physical call. So all the stuff that cell phone engineers would like to know, the SIM card information. Probably the only useful thing here is this signal strength portion. But I just thought it was nice to be able to put your phone into that field test mode. And so *3001 hash 12345 hash star. And that puts you right into it. So I've been playing with that all week. It was kind of fun to do.
I'm at negative 120 dB. I guess.
So you're negative 120. I got negative 98 over here.
This thing keeps bouncing all over the place. 128.
Negative 128. Yeah, I got negative I got negative 98 sitting here, Jim.
Wow. Okay, so now that we've bored everybody to tears.
That's right. So now let's
but go.
This is something you can go to the party and you can put your phone into a field test mode and you can really
kill the room.
Yeah, you could kill the room possibly.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Wait a minute, hang on. We got somebody on the
phone. We got a winner.
You've lost track. We have a winner. Yes,
oh,
let
good.
Us go to the
phone.
So phones.
All of our listeners haven't dropped off yet.
No, we're working on it though. Let's go to line one. This is Jeff calling from Columbia, Maryland. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How
good.
Are you?
Very good, thank you. Dr. Schertz, please ask
yes,
the question.
Earlier in the show I talked about Sebastian Thrun. He, of course, was the founder of Google X Labs. He worked on self-driving cars. What was another project he worked on while he was at Google?
Google Glass.
Google Glass, correct.
We have us a winner.
Yeah, very good. Very good. You win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room and the Karim Dining Room.
Jeff, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Stand by just a second. We're going to hook you up with Andrew Mitchell here, and he will get all of your information, and we will get that prize right out to you. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and we shall return in just a moment with more of our show.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. This is the tech invention of the week.
Okay.
A spoon that steadies tremors. I love this thing. It's called the Liftware Spoon. Liftware Spoon is designed for people whose hand tremor interferes with the activities of daily living. They can't really pick up their food. So it helps cancel out hand tremors caused by Parkinson's disease or something, another medical condition, which they call essential tremor. Sensors in the liftware handle detect the person's tremor, and the device responds using motors to move the spoon in the opposite direction of the tremor. The spoon can discern motion from hand tremors, from other types of tremors, which allowing it to respond just to the tremor while preserving the user's intended motion. Liftware reduces the shaking of a spoon by an average of 76%. Hmm. Now, the company was started by a group of scientists from NIH with the support of Rock Health. And the And this company was just acquired by Google X because Google X wants to be using technology to help the world. And so it fit into their mission. And Google wants to help them scale operations. So you can actually go to liftware.com if you want to get just Google Liftware spoon. And a spoon costs $295. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you have somebody who could use the spoon, you can buy it for them. They can test it out whether it actually cancels out their tremor.
Uh-huh.
And if it works, you keep it. If it doesn't work, you can return it. I just love the kind of technology.
LiftLabsDesign.com.
Yes, thank you. LiftLabsDesign.com. Okay, let's talk about Christmas gifts now. We got 20 minutes here. Okay, so this is a very selective list. These are all things that I like.
Of course.
Now, you know, I have the Philips Hue lighting all over the house. You know, these
because
LED lights
special.
All over the house.
Yes.
I've got 50 of these Philips Hue light bulbs. I went berserk over these things. I love them. I can change the colors anywhere in the house. The trouble with the Philips Hue bulb is that every bulb is $60.
That's right, yes.
So they're expensive. Well, and they'll change. You can adjust the color to anything you want. Well, Philips came out with the Philips Lux Starter Kit. Now, the Philips Lux bulbs, you can't change the color. They just have a nice sort of white glow.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just are single color. They look like kind of a regular light bulb, and you can dim them at your want. But the nice thing is they're only $30. So,
well, it's so much more affordable.
Well, it's a lot better than $60.
Yes, it
but
is.
But see, the thing is, it looks like a 60-watt bulb, but it only uses 5 watts. And the light bulb is good for 10,000 hours. So I'm not going to have to change the light bulb for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, probably the return on investment is a good long while, but I like the fact that now you can get Philips Lux, and now they're only $30 a bulb. They also have the Philips Hue Tap. This is I got these out of order. The Philips Hue Tap.
Thanks.
See, one of the issues with the Philips Hue light bulbs, I control them with my iPhone.
Right.
And I've got an application that's always connected. Well, there are other people in the house. They can never quite get their iPhone connected up properly, and so it becomes.
We're not naming names here.
No name, and it's always an issue. It's always an issue because now I've got this great lighting system, but now it's like that you have to go to IT support to get the, you know,
and
get
your
it working.
IT support.
Yeah. So the Philips Hue Tap is actually a switch that you can put in the room, and you punch the button, and you can adjust it just by pushing a button. And so you don't have to have your cell phone there at all.
So tapping it.
You tap it, and it's got 4 buttons to turn it on and off, and you got a couple of other buttons to pick what color you want.
Okay.
So with the Philips Hue Tap, you know, this allows for people that are not, say, tech savvy to just use it more like a light bulb. Now, the Philips Hue Tap, it's $60 for this particular switch.
You're bleeding me dry just putting light bulbs
but
in
see,
here.
But see, that solves a particular problem for me, which is why
it's on the list.
This is why it's on the list, yeah. Now, the Logic Harmony Ultimate Home Remote. I like this because, first of all, this remote will not only, you know, can be used to operate your Harmony TV system, but it'll also talk to the Hue light bulbs. So I can control my Hue light bulbs with this, and it will connect to apps in your iOS system, your iPhone or your Android, and you can use it to talk to, say, a Nest thermostat. You can use it to talk to a home entertainment system. So this is probably a universal remote for all of your home activities because everything sort of talks with a standardized wireless protocol. And that particular remote, for those of you that want to get all of this nice stuff done, you can do it. And like a Nest thermostat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Nest came out this learning thermostat. You know how you program your thermostat, you know, to go down at night, you know, get this complicated schedule.
No, I just leave it at 71 degrees.
So that's the same with me. It's just too complicated to sit there. I mean, I suppose I could get this 20-page book and I could program my thermostat, but, you know, I don't do it. It turns out what the Nest does, it remembers what you do. So you turn it down, turn
right.
it up. It remembers it. And then it can detect when you're in the house or not because you're walking around, and it adjusts the heat on itself. So, like, suppose you're not in the house, It doesn't detect you walking around. It might lower the temperature. It knows you're going to come back at 5 o'clock. It raises the temperature. Mm-hmm. And so the Nest thermostat actually saves a lot of money. It's around $200. Get this, the Harmony Ultimate Home Remote will talk to the Nest.
No kidding.
Yeah. So you see, everything is now
everything
unified.
Is connected to everything. This is my kind of list.
Now, if you want to also have a drop cam Wi-Fi video monitoring system.
And why not?
Why not? Nest also sells that. And that's between $99 and $199. And you can get all sorts of video there. You can upload it to the cloud. It connects to the same Logitech Harmony remote control. So everything is unified together through Wi-Fi. And then the ultimate... The August Smart Lock, mm-hmm. connecting also to the Wi-Fi. Now, the nice thing with this Smart Lock, it uses the same deadbolt and everything, and you can use the same hole that's drilled in your door, and you just slip it in, and it will basically, it's a motor that will turn the lock on its own. It got great reviews. It's a little pricey, $250 to $500, but... It has a Bluetooth enabled, so you can have an app in your phone, and as you walk up to the front door, it'll unlock.
Automatically. Or do you have to push?
No, automatically, because it'll sense that you're there.
Wow.
You can also suppose you can send a key to somebody to their phone, and when they walk up, it will unlock.
So what if you forgot, maybe you left the house, you're driving down the street, I forgot to lock the door. Can you do that remotely with this thing?
It will automatically lock.
So no more forgetting to lock up.
Yeah. So the only problem is if you leave without your cell phone,
then you got a problem.
No. But you do have a key option,
right,
in the event.
Okay.
So like suppose you've got a party tomorrow night.
I don't. But go ahead.
But just say you were inviting 100 people.
Okay.
It would be a major blast.
Yes.
You could send a key to all 100 people invited to your party that was good for a 2-hour time block. So only good for that 2-hour time block. They come to the front door, it unlocks, and they can come in. So you don't have to be running back. You know, somebody comes there, you leave the bar and have to go to the front door and open it. It will, mm-hmm, automatically unlock for you.
That's pretty neat.
Or suppose you've got the cleaning lady who's coming Tuesday at 11 o'clock. You could leave a time window open for them, give it to them, and then you can restrict it. So it's actually a very good way to manage access to the house instead of giving out keys.
Could you, get your dog a cell phone with a lock on it so he can let himself in and out of the apartment?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you could, well, you'd have to, you know, hook the cell. That's probably a possible option, yeah. They don't have that feature yet unless you strap a cell phone to your dog's collar.
See, there you go. I mean, I'm trying to teach my dog to take care of himself.
So there you go. This is sort of all the things that are on my little wish list. You can, mm-hmm, see this, yeah.
Yeah, I see.
That's right.
Okay, so you have other ideas here too, right?
Yeah, so let's look at some other tech gifts that, you know, Bluetooth speakers are really, you know.
Aren't they really, yeah.
They're nice to have. So the one that I have is the Bose SoundLink speaker.
And that is amazing.
It's $200. I love that.
And it's worth every penny of it.
I love the Bose Bluetooth SoundLink speaker. I've had it about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the battery lasts a long time. It's got fantastic sound.
Plus, you can leave it, if you wanted to, you could leave it in the cradle.
Yeah, leave it in the cradle, and it's always charged up. Now, mm-hmm, if you don't want to spend $200, the JBL Jawbone Jambox Bluetooth speaker is less than $100. And that has gotten great, great reviews. It's, you know, people say the sound is really good. Some people, though, just want to have like a smaller Bluetooth speaker that go around with them. So the Jam Classic Bluetooth wireless speaker for $20. So, you know, maybe you're a teenager in the house, or one of the kids wants to take a Bluetooth speaker with them. There's one for only $20, and, mm-hmm, it's got pretty good sound. It's wireless. Now, in terms of headsets, now the one that I love.
And the one that you have, right?
And the one that I have. Have you noticed this list is all about me?
Well, you know what? I'm checking off what you have so I know what not to get you for Christmas.
So this list is all about me. That's terrible. Bose Quiet Comfort Noise Cancellation Headphones are around $300. I love these, especially when I'm flying on an airplane, because it cancels out that airplane background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And
like screaming people
and crying babies.
Right.
And so I can be on a plane and I'm just happy. Now, if you now, of course, the newest entree to the headphone area are the Beats.
The Dr. Dre Beats.
The Dr. Dre Beats, and they've got the studio wireless headphones. You see, the thing with the Bose, it's not wireless. You got to plug it in.
Right, right, right.
So the Beats are saying, well, we are now Wi-Fi or Bluetooth wireless, so you don't need a wire. So you can, but those headphones, the wireless headphones are between $300 and $600.
I'm thinking,
I'm not going to spend $600 on a headset.
When I bought my headphones that I'm wearing now, I looked at some of the Dr. Dre's. They're too clunky. I don't like clunky headphones.
Yeah, I don't like them. But they have these nice. They're designed, I think, probably to appeal to somebody in a different age bracket than me. With the
Reed Younger.
Reed Younger. Yeah, that's right. So I think the Bose might be for the old fogies. I don't know, but
No. Audio aficionados, yes.
See, like, I would never get red headphone.
No, that would not be you.
And that's one of the...
You'd get Stratford Blue.
That's, I'd get Stratford Blue. Now, if you don't want to spend that much money, the Audio Technica ATH-M30 headset has got great reviews and great sound. It's not noise cancellation, but it's only $60.
And they're not wireless, right?
They're not wireless.
Okay.
But it's $60, so if you want to give a good quality headset to someone, you don't want to spend...
$300, $600.
You can get that one for under $60. Now, the other big thing this year are these media streaming options, you know, where you plug something into your HDMI port in your TV and you can stream stuff directly to it through Wi-Fi. Now, number one on the list, Google Chromecast I have. That's $35, but currently Amazon's currently selling it for $23.
Really?
Yeah, and you can only buy one. There's a limit. There's a limit of one at $23. But what I discovered was, I wait because I needed to order three. I'm giving these as gifts. So I waited 24 hours and I ordered a second one.
So one every 24 hours.
So then. I think it's one every 24 hours. So I'm doing research on that. So Google Chromecast allows you to basically mirror, like if you've got an iPad or an iPhone or you've got a Chrome browser open, you can basically send that screen to the TV. And so you operate Google Chromecast without a remote or anything. So I use it to, I'll bring up Netflix on my iPhone or my iPad and I'll send it to the TV and I can watch Netflix. So I got one TV without internet connection on it, but I use the Google Chromecast. Now, Apple TV's been around for a while. Now, that has a remote control on it, and you can use that for streaming media. So a lot of people that have Macs and the Mac infrastructure, you can display all your pictures on your Mac. You can have slideshows. So they've got a great ecosystem if you're 100% Mac guy. But that's $99, and it also has Netflix and everything else. But they don't have as many media options as the other ones. We've got Roku Streaming, R-O-K-U. That's from $40 to $100. They've got the best content. There's no mirroring like Google Chromecast. They have remote control. They also support an app. They support either an iPhone app or an Android app, so you can control the Roku through the app. And a lot of people say the Roku is the best because it's got the best app options, but that's if you want to deal with a remote. And then the last entree to the thing was the Amazon Fire. That's $40. It's got limited content now. Their app only supports the Android, and you've got a remote control. And so that probably you might want to wait a year before you get the Amazon Fire. So those are one of the big things that are coming along the board now.
Gotcha. You have more, don't you?
I got a lot.
You just keep going. Let's run out the hour. Because I still don't know what to get you.
This is all about me. So just be taking notes over there.
I am.
Okay, now, I think an external USB hard drive is a great gift for people. You can get a 2 terabyte USB external hard drive for less than $100. You can get a 1 terabyte hard drive for $60. There are a lot of people out there that take all these digital photos and they don't store them.
Right.
They're all over the place. So what you do is you give them this external hard drive gift, and along with the gift, you say, look, I'll help you organize your pictures. I'll put them in folders for you. I'll help. Because there are a lot of, like, people in the older generation, not like, you know.
Not us.
No, older than us.
Yes.
Who really might need help organizing their digital photos. And so this could be really a great gift. Now remember, just putting them on the hard drive, if you delete them from the computer, there's no backup. A backup means they're stored two places, not just one. So I have the Toshiba. You can get Toshiba, Seagate, Western Digital. I have Toshiba. It got great reviews. And I've got a 1 terabyte Toshiba, which I bought it for $100. Now it's only $60. But that is a great gift for many people. Then, of course, the big item out now, the fitness trackers. So, you know, because now the new iPhone app has that health application. What do they call it? They've got the heart on it. It's called Health. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's got the Health app. And that will connect to all kinds of devices. And there are so many out there now. I just put down three. The Garmin VivoSmart. They got great reviews. That's $169. Now, the VivoSmart brings together activity tracking of the fitness band and the notifications of a smartwatch. So it's got two things. It's got notification and tracking. So it sort of knows about what you're up to. For instance, it will track your calories, your sleep, your steps. And then it will vibrate to remind you that it says, hey, you haven't. You know, why don't you move again? You got to move. And so it sort of keeps you going in case you've been sitting at your desk for too long. It's kind of a great combination. And that's $169. Move, M-O-O-V, got great reviews. It's $79. Move isn't like a traditional fitness tracker that merely tracks steps, calories, and sleep. Move's 3D sensors and Siri-like voice coach can guide you through running, walking, and boxing workouts, making certain that you move correctly to get the most out of your exercise. It's sort of like a coach. Move. Now, the Fitbit Flex has been around. Fitbit's been around for a while. Flex works with either Android or iPhone. Bluetooth compatible means you don't have to upload your data transfers. And it will track your sleep and your steps and all of that sort of stuff. And if you can upgrade it to the Fitbit Force if you want a full screen, which doubles as a watch. So those are all fitness trackers. And kind of the last category were laptops.
Right.
Okay. I think the Apple MacBook Air, the 13-inch, is a great device. That is a great device. The 11-inch MacBook Air, I think the screen's a little bit small, but that 13-inch MacBook Air, it's light. It's really nice. It's less than $1,000. I was looking on the web today, I saw one for $880. It's a great price. Now, you can get the Acer Aspire Switch 10. Now, this is what they call a hybrid. It's, you know, it's where the keyboard clips off and it's a touch screen. Mm-hmm. It could be a tablet or a laptop. That actually, it's got a very good magnetic detachable system. It's one of the hybrids. It's a nice unit. It's only $320. Now, the Acer Chromebook 13, now, you know, this is basically, it's a, this basically uses online applications. And so it's basically uses Google Apps, you know, Google, all the Google products for online operation. Now, it actually replaces the normal x86 Intel CPU with an ARM-based CPU from NVIDIA, and it's got a very great 13-inch high-definition screen and great graphics. The final one would be HP Stream. That, by the way, that was Chromebook's only $350. The HP Stream's a low-end device, which only costs $200, and it'll actually act like a Chromebook, or it will also operate with Windows. So it's kind of the rundown of the gifts today. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and make certain to go to the Stratford University website at stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Tuned in late or want to hear the show again, it will replay here on Federal News Radio, 7 o'clock tomorrow. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We have Caps hockey on the air for you today here on Federal News Radio. The Caps travel north of the border to take on the Maple Leafs in Toronto starting at 7 o'clock for the puck drop. The first the pregame is at 6:45. Lots of clouds in D.C. today. 46 for the high right now, 35 outside our studios at 10 a.m.